So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols.
So stress and insulin resistance. We're going to talk about what stress is and how it affects health and weight. We're going to talk about the importance of using goals and visions to help people make health-supporting choices every day. When people don't really know what's important to them, they just make haphazard choices. And I'm sure you've been there, right? You don't really, well, you know, maybe I'll skip gluten today. Maybe I'll have toast because I'm out with my boyfriend and he's having this amazing toast and I'll just eat it. It's no big deal. When you're really connected to the outcome and what you want, you're going to make good choices. And that's what you can work with people on right from the start. Just taking stress transformation breaks in 1 to 2 minute intervals. And we'll talk about heart math and some of the wonderful techniques there. And I've given you lots of resources on your site. Noticing and celebrating positive aspects. I have a document that I'm giving you that you can use with people called the Positive Aspects Journal. It's something that I learned a few years back that I found really helpful for people to start to focus on the positive, which shifts their nervous system from sympathetic to parasympathetic, where healing happens. We'll give you some resources for emotional eating patterns, because you're going to see a lot of people come in and they don't eat for nourishment. They eat because it's an entertainment factor or because it's an emotional response. And I give you a document in the site that will help you to help other people create an emotional eating pattern for themselves. The importance of fun as a regular part of their health regime. We all are guilty of overlooking that. And periodically throughout the day, sometimes I'll say, okay, I'm just going to go outside and I'm going to put my feet in the hot tub. And I'm going to just sit and stare at the sun for 5 minutes. And that I consider fun. Or take out, you know, a puzzle and do a puzzle. And teaching people to take that time, even if it's 3 to 5 minutes a day, it's going to shift their physiology. We're also going to talk about the power of appreciation to transform health challenges, achieve ideal weight, energize and revitalize cells. So let's begin. So what really is stress? We all think about stress and says, oh, this bad thing. It's used to describe the wear and tear the body experiences in reaction to everyday tensions and stresses and pressures. When the demand on the body or on the psyche exceeds the capacity to respond, that's considered a stress. But there are good stresses, right? You go out to the gym and you pick up a weight and you start to do bicep curls with it, and you get to about 8 of them and you just can't go any further and you have to stop. You just put a stress on that muscle, right? You took it to fatigue. What happens? It responds. It reacts by strengthening. So over several weeks of doing that, you're going to be able to lift more and more and more. So there's good stress. The stresses that are damaging are the stresses that exceed the capacity to respond without replenishing and rebuilding. Okay, so where does it all begin? And this is critical. A lot of folks, especially if you're new in practice, you're gonna jump in and you wanna use all the great nutrition techniques you've learned to teach people recipes and put them on supplements and herbs. Really has to start with alignment. And I like to call it a head-heart habits approach. You want to align your head and your heart, and that makes the habits just flow. If you start with habits, like, oh, I'm going to give up gluten, and oh, I'm going to, you know, exercise every day, but you don't have your head and your heart aligned with that, it very quickly goes by the wayside. You're going to see that a lot with your clients, right? They get all excited and then they say, yeah, tell me what to do. And you tell them what to do. And then they start doing it. And a couple of weeks later, something better comes along. You know, they have a wedding. Their sister gets married. Their daughter has a birthday. And they go, well, you know, it's just okay to eat the chocolate cake today. Because their head and their heart were not aligned with that new habit of not eating chocolate cake and eating, you know, lots of veggies and fruits instead. The experience that you have plus the beliefs equals the thoughts. So if somebody's had an experience really early on of being soothed by food, of every time they fell, grandma gave them a lollipop, then every time they hurt themselves emotionally or physically, they're going to turn to food, a lollipop, M&M's, bakery, bread, whatever, to soothe. And that's the basis upon which their thoughts come, what they believe. Wow, food heals my pain. So that triggers a thought. So when they start to have pain, they're going to reach for food to soothe it. The thoughts also trigger an emotion. So when you think about something as being, oh, that's so bad, that's going to trigger an emotion of sadness or fear, instead of thinking as something, you think about something, oh, wow, that was really fun, that was really good, that's going to trigger an emotion of joy, a positive emotion. Your emotions and thoughts are energy, and really clarifying that with people, when they have thoughts or emotions, it's an energy exchange. And certain emotions will benefit the physiology, like joy, bliss, gratitude. It benefits the physiology. And we'll talk about some of the hormonal changes that it causes. And others harm it. And it's through molecular changes. So when you can help people to change their thoughts and their emotions, the habits can just happen. It's not like putting a monkey wrench in there and trying to force it to happen. So the new habits can replace the old destructive habits when you have the head and the heart aligned. The desire for something and the thoughts about it. It's too hard to make diet changes, you might hear someone say. That thought is going to trigger an emotion of resistance, of fear, of sadness if they have to change their diet or do some things that they haven't been doing before. It's too hard is a belief. And a lot of people hold that belief. And sometimes I'll just say, well, what would it be like for you if it wasn't so hard? They go, oh, wow, it'd be great, and I would this, and I'm like, wow, okay. What if you could decide that it's really not hard? Which is harder, getting your chest cracked open to replace valves and vessels in your heart because of a clog as a result of your poor diet and lifestyle choices? Which is harder, that or choosing the salad over the pizza? Which is harder? Personally, I'll take choosing the salad over the pizza any day, as opposed to getting my chest cracked open. But you're going to deal with people in different phases of their belief system. And it's up to you to really work with them at the start. And that's going to set you apart as well. That you're not jumping in and just giving them a list of things to do and things to take. A little stress causes you to have an energy boost. Oh, you're pushed in terms of working towards your goal. But that chronic, day in, day out, have long-term and short-term health consequences. Some people, it's their immune system starts to fail. With others, it's the blood pressure goes up, hardening of the arteries, right? Decreased function of various organs. And it can permanently compromise the health and accelerate their aging and throw off their whole blood sugar mechanism, which creates a whole bunch of problems. And we'll look at the details on that. So the body reacts when there's stress. There's a feeling of tension, of strain, sometimes frustration. Muscles might tighten, you know, in the neck and in the abdomen and the chest. And heart rate for sure increases, and that's a result of the secretion of hormones, cortisol and adrenaline. Perspiration increases. Again, cortisol and adrenaline cause that. The logical thought process is replaced by irrational and unreasonable thoughts when you're under stress. And so that's the time when people make the poorest lifestyle and food choices as well. But what I like to refer to as the lizard brain, which is the back part of the brain, the primitive brain, gets control to get you out of the trouble. That's the lizard. It just knows how to fight or flight. and it takes control over the prefrontal cortex. Cortisol inhibits the prefrontal cortex. So if you're stressed because you're going into an important meeting and you have to perform, or because you're going in to take a test and you don't do some techniques to shift yourself out of that stress mode, you're dooming yourself because your high-level functioning is not going to kick in and work. Everything gets disrupted. Your physiology, your psychology, everything gets disrupted. Equilibrium goes bleh, you're off kilter. You feel kind of weird. And when this happens on a regular basis and continues over time, you're going to have things, failure of different systems. And you're going to see that in your clients. And when you can get them under control, when you can use the emotional piece to help them to make the right choices about what they eat and drink and how they breathe and how they move, then they're going to get the results that they need. They're going to follow through because it makes sense to them. So let's talk a little bit about cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone. When you get a response, like there's a fear, there's a tiger chasing you, you are going to have this response where your body at first produces adrenaline and then follows up with cortisol. Adrenaline is really quick. It's a neurotransmitter, quick in and out, quick in and out. It can be continued to be secreted, but generally the cortisol comes in and lasts longer. Cortisol's job, one of its jobs, is to increase the blood sugar. So when you have someone sitting at their desk and the boss is yelling at them and they're getting stressed, or they have a deadline, or they just heard from the child's teacher that the child failed a test, or their financial situation has changed and they're getting stressed sitting at the desk, the cortisol increases the blood sugar. But guess what? There's no activity to go with that. If there really was a tiger chasing you, you'd run and get rid of that sugar in the blood. So instead, that increased blood sugar goes through the same process as if you've just eaten a meal. And if there's a dysfunction there, if there's insulin resistance there, when you get stressed, you're increasing your blood sugar, which is going to increase the storage of belly fat because you're not burning it. It's going to thicken the artery walls. It's going to increase the blood pressure and keep it there. It's going to turn down the digestive tract, close the valves, decrease the enzymatic secretions. And so you've got a lot of dysfunction that occurs as a result of cortisol, because cortisol is only supposed to be going up for short bursts, not a long period of time. And when we do it all the time, and when your patients are doing this all the time, they're affecting their blood sugar mechanism. When cortisol goes and looks for storage of sugar to pull out into the blood, it likes the process called gluconeogenesis instead of lipolysis or lipolysis. I like to say lipolysis. Some people say lipolysis. Lipolysis or lipolysis is the breakdown of fat. So you turn fat into sugar and put it in the blood. Cortisol favors breaking down muscle protein tissue via gluconeogenesis, and it actually can reduce the rate of fat burning. So it's a double whammy. So it converts your protein in your muscles and your connective tissue to glucose and glycogen, which is one of the reasons that when people go on corticosteroids for any length of time, they end up with muscle thinning, tissue weakening. It's a serious side effect. Well, if you have someone who's under stress all the time and they're constantly upping their levels of cortisol, the same situation is going to happen in their body. Their immune system is going to be depleted. The muscles are going to thin, and they're going to have problems. Okay? It also decreases bone formation. A lot of people don't realize this. So it can create and enhance the process of osteoporosis or osteopenia, a lot of stress. So this is something you want to help people get under control, right? Why would you want to ignore this piece and just talk to them about the food? What you might find is somebody comes in and their diet isn't all that bad, but the stress levels. And I'll just tell you a short personal story about cortisol. When I had my elbow surgery and they had to cut into me a 5-inch incision and cut all the way to the bone and cut bone off and put it in the right place, that's a pretty serious stress on my body. Even though I was meditating and doing heart math and keeping my mental and emotional state in a good place, the physical trauma was creating the stress in my body. My adrenals could not differentiate between a tiger biting open my elbow or a surgeon who knew what he was doing repairing my elbow. It's still the same thing. It's cutting of the tissue. It's trauma. And as a result, when I got back after the surgery, all I'd had was about 8 ounces of green juice, pure green, no sugar, no fruit, just no carrots, no beets, just kale, celery, cucumber, and ginger juice. And 8 ounces of that over time, sipped very slowly. I took my blood sugar. It was 147. I decided to eat an avocado to get it down. It was still in the 140s to 170s all day long. Why? It had nothing to do with food. It had everything to do with stress. Had I been able to measure my cortisol levels, I wish there was a home test for cortisol levels that would so empower so many people, wouldn't it? I would have found that my cortisol levels were high. Even though I was laying there and breathing and appreciating and meditating and doing things to relax my psyche, the cortisol was coursing through my system because I just got bit by a tiger. I didn't just have a tiger chasing me that day. I got bit. So it's really important for us to monitor this and approach this. Don't make the mistake of just jumping right into, here's some exercises, here's some diet, let's see how you do. If somebody's coming in and you're looking at their diet plan and the diet looks pretty darn good, then you gotta look at the stress. I've had people in my program and people I've coached privately who've told me that they were going along, blood sugars are perfect, and they just finished their smoothie, which they had before that only raised their blood sugar to 98, and then they got a phone call, and it was a stressful phone call, and they decided after that, right after the smoothie, the phone call, they tested their blood sugar, and they were like, oh my God, how did my blood sugar get up to 140? Why? Because they got really stressed. And you can help people to use all the tools that you have. She was smart. She thought about what have I done? What have I learned? I'm going to go out and do some burst training. So she did some burst training. She did a walk around the block. She came back and her blood sugar got normal again. So these are things you can teach people. I've had people do heart math. I had somebody's blood sugar go down 100 points right there in front of me by taking her through heart math. So let's go through, let's review some of the interactions with cortisol and some of the other hormones. Stress causes the release of cortisol. Within about 30 minutes, the cortisol should break down into the building blocks for DHEA, because DHEA and cortisol have the same building blocks. But if the stress is prolonged, that doesn't happen. So what happens is the DHEA suffers. So if you keep thinking the stressful thoughts that trigger the response, the cortisol just keeps persisting. And healing is inhibited because DHEA is a healing. It's a growth and repair hormone. And when you're stealing the precursors away, you're sacrificing the DHEA for the cortisol. And the cortisol has all those negative effects. So it causes your body to break down. It's also the same precursors for cortisol as for your sex hormones. So that's another important piece of this. So if your person is under stress a lot, they may find that their libido is down. That's a clear sign. So in addition to all the stuff with bone and blood sugar and collagen formation, libido is a biggie too. So let's talk about how stress affects insulin resistance, the insulin receptors. The stress increases the cortisol and the adrenaline. The preferred stress fuel is glucose. Not fat, not glycogen. They want glucose. And the fat can be converted, the muscle can be converted into glucose easily. Branched chain amino acids get converted more easily into sugar than does the fat. So the cortisol favors the breakdown of muscle, as we've already talked about. It's easy source of protein. It's quick, it's easy, it raises the sugar pretty quickly. That's another reason people think, well, when they just eat protein, why would their blood sugar go up? And it can go up because the protein can be converted into sugar. So once the sugar goes up, of course, like we know, insulin gets secreted. And when the insulin gets secreted, but you're not burning that sugar, the sugar sits in the cells more, in the bloodstream, more insulin gets secreted, you end up with hyperinsulinemia and eventually chronic stress, will lead you to insulin resistance. Cortisol and insulin are at war with each other because insulin's job is to decrease blood sugar, right? Right? You just have, you eat something, you have a meal, insulin says, come on, bring it down. Cortisol's job is to provide fuel and increase the blood sugar. Once you have the insulin in the system, it's going to block the release of fuel from the cells. So it's going to make it difficult to break it down, especially break down fat, which is why cortisol is able to get to the muscle and break that down. You need a lot more fuel when you have cortisol. So the effect of these war, this civil war between insulin and cortisol, is that you have this gnawing craving for carbohydrates. It's like, I just need some sugar right now. Have you ever experienced that? Have you ever spoken to clients that have experienced that? I just need sugar right now. And it is especially prominent a couple of hours after the meal. So this is where you want to be intervening. Not just with the meal, of course, you want to do all the diet things we talked about last, but it's very important that you manage the stress. DHEA has the opposite effect. DHEA actually helps to decrease both visceral, meaning around the organs, and subcutaneous, under the skin, abdominal fat. And it significantly increases the sensitivity of the cells. So if someone is adrenally fatigued and their DHEA levels are low, that's going to impact the improvement that they're going to get by doing an insulin resistance reset program. So we have to make sure that their DHEA is good. That's why I put DHEA on the list of things that are helpful to test. And you could test DHEA in the bloodstream, DHEA sulfate, or you can test it in the saliva. And I would recommend that people who have problems with insulin resistance also get an adrenal stress test, because you can work the two at the same time. This was a study in JAMA, double-blind placebo-controlled study in JAMA that talked about the significance of DHEA in increasing insulin sensitivity. So how does stress increase belly fat? Well, this is another JAMA study from 2004. Chronic stress increases cortisol, decreases DHEA, triggers the breakdown of muscle into blood sugar, increases insulin. Insulin inhibits fat burning, accelerates fat storage, and then DHEA significantly decreases subcutaneous fat and increases insulin sensitivity. So the decrease in DHEA affects this whole thing, and you end up with more belly fat. So what are you going to do about it? You need tools. Now, whatever tools you use to decrease stress are fine. I give you some tools here. It doesn't mean you have to use just my tools. Maybe you're a yoga instructor. Maybe you're a Tai Chi instructor. Maybe you've been trained in some really cool stress management system, tapping, or there's one called the work, or there's so many things that can help. It's finding the stuff that you can, that you're comfortable teaching and that your clients are comfortable receiving. And it may be different for each person. I teach HeartMath a lot, and some people just don't resonate with HeartMath. I teach them tapping. That works better for them. The whole idea, though, is that you want them to build their emotional energy reserves so that every little stress is not tapping in and leaving them exhausted. You want to plug the emotional drains. And that's, you know, that's a process too. And that's either you can work with somebody or refer them to another practitioner if it's really serious that can help them. What do I mean by plugging the emotional drains? Well, there's a lot of times there's relationships that may be happening that are draining you emotionally. Like going to visit mom and mom just starts in with criticizing your hair and your makeup and your nails and your weight and the whole bit. It's not a positive thing. And either the person needs to learn ways to protect from that energy or stay out of it and old emotional habits. These are all processes that you take people through. And this is not a shortcut thing. You can be doing this concurrently with the food. You don't have to do these things sequentially, but I highly recommend that you don't skip this part. So some of the antidotes to stress that I really like. Appreciation. Just playing the appreciation game. Every time you go to a new room, you find three things to appreciate. You find yourself finding things to appreciate, and every step along the way. I like what I call mini vacations, and it's really a technique. It's a kind of a slight modification of a technique from HeartMath called quick coherence. And basically, I have people get into the mode of hand over their heart. I like to have put the other hand over the belly, take some deep breaths, and go on vacation. Find a place where you just feel so good. It could be a waterfall. It could be a beach. It could be the mountains, wherever you feel just really safe and connected, and you breathe. Helping them to build fun into their life, helping them to build high self-esteem, and I've given you resources for all of this. That self-esteem thing is there, the Positive Aspects Journal. And there's a whole document on the site that's going to help guide you through this. Some of these techniques you're going to love, you're going to resonate with, you'll do. Others you're just going to not do. And you're going to have to do them yourself to feel comfortable with them before you're comfortable teaching them. But remember, what works for you may not work for others. Yoga, meditation, tapping, EFT, those are all techniques to help antidote the stress, help to transform the stress in the moment. So the stuff that I've given you some of my goal-setting resources, some of the processes and the forms that I use with people to help them to set their goals and get really connected to what they want most, and that helps them with their habits. I've got my own little system of stress transformation. You've got that as a bonus on the program where it's 30 days of stress transformation. I will be making that available as a product as soon as we get some free cycles to be able to do that. So if you really like it and you want your client to do it, you could sign up as an affiliate and you can send them there, and then you'll get a percentage of whatever they pay for it. So it's actually a way to increase your income as well as get the process and not have to do the whole thing yourself. There's a book on HeartMath, Transforming Stress. It's a little $11 book. You can refer people to that. There's a lot of ways that you can teach them these things. I'm giving you something called the Portable Anchor System, which helps people to stay connected to their goals. The Positive Aspects Journal, which helps them to just really focus on all the things that they like about themselves and to bring up their self-esteem, which helps to reduce stress. An emotional eating strategies document I've got. I've got the Healing Power of Fun and Appreciation document, and then another document called Emotional Landscape. So basically, I've provided you with a set of tools that I use. Do I use every single one of these on every single person? No. I just pick and choose. Some people, we do go through them all. And some people resonate more with one than the other. And if I give them one and they just don't seem to resonate, then I'll share a different tool. I just think that the more they're doing to transform that internal environment and take them away from being a high stress, always, you know, getting on their own case, into really loving themselves, enjoying life, and looking at the bright side, that's going to help them tremendously to overcome their insulin resistance. There's something I teach called the emotional landscape. It's interesting because I was teaching something very similar to this before I even went to HeartMath to learn it. I didn't have this little chart. I would just teach people about, you know, the effects of cortisol and the effects of DHEA and how we want to move them. And I love this because this lays it out. Anytime during the day, you, your client, all of us are going to be in one of these states. And we could be in the high energy negative emotions, which are anger and rage and all those sorts of things. Or the high energy positive emotion, which is just bliss and joy and excitement and exuberance. We can be in low energy negative emotions of frustration and helplessness and powerlessness and depression. Or the low energy positive emotions where you go sometimes when you're in yoga or meditation, where it's just calm and tranquil. And as much as possible, you want to keep out of the negative emotions, but it's going to happen, right? Something's going to happen that's going to get you angry. And it's learning techniques to shift you from the negative emotions into the positive emotions, okay? And on the side of the positive emotions, DHEA flourishes. On the side of negative emotions, cortisol flourishes. And we want a balance between high energy and low energy. If you're always in the state of just excitement and you're just up there, that's going to be draining on the body as well. You want to balance that with the calm states and the tranquility states. Being on a roller coaster all day long maybe feels great, but not all day long, it's going to wear you out. So it's finding a balance between high and low energy on the positive side. When you teach people about this, they can actually plot their emotions and see where they find themselves most of the time, and you can teach them to shift, and that's going to help their stress levels dramatically. So that's the stress stuff. You've got a lot of resources to explore on the site. It's really, really important.